bin erst so krass gefühlt, ich bin nicht von
So the question is, why does Asanga abbreviate the 12 links in dependent origination? I assume the essence is there. Just seems odd not to have clinging
and craving.
And craving, especially included. This is not the asanga, this is I make it simple. But actually asanga also makes it simple. You can make this dependent origination, actually the thirst develops into grasping, the grasping develops into the existence, and existence develops into the birth, and the birth develops into aging, the disease, the death, and all the troubles connected with that, the lamentation and so on. So it is a process, but all this process is actually the clinging. The thirst is clinging. Due to thirst, then the clinging is clinging, and the existence is also clinging. The Buddha you cannot catch because he has no existence. Why he has no existence? Because he has gone beyond clinging. So, as the suttas explain, I think Hema Sutta, if I'm not wrong, the Buddha is like the space you cannot catch. Similarly, no clinging. And what we cling to actually is not the reality, because we don't know the reality. What we cling to are the sammuti, the conventional truths about the reality. So the Sutta Nipata explained yācha loke samutiyo nate upeti muni. Whatever conventions they are in the world, the muni, the wise man, does not cling to them. Does not cling, upeti does not only mean not cling to them, but he does not hold to them. But he is still following the convention. If we don't follow the convention, we create a lot of problems for ourselves and for others. But we hold to the convention and we cling. That creates a problem. What convention? Man, woman, car, house, and so on. We need this convention, but who says we need to cling to them? The Buddha does not live in this convention, the wise man live in this convention, but doesn't cling to them. So he can be example how to deal with all situations without getting being the balance of his mind being influenced by them. our balance of mind is influenced by that, because we cling to the convention. We live in convention, but cling to convention. So the Buddha was a real revolutionary. Real revolutionary is not destroying everything, but understanding the real needs without clinging. Okay, that is only one question. No more question. Then we can do the sitting. Okay. Yes, it is our advantage, because we were not Buddhists, we are not brought up as Buddhists, and we came to Buddhism because we are very curious. Curiosity is a wonderful thing. The philosophy is the result of curiosity. If there was no curiosity, there would not be philosophy. Curiosity leads to deeper understanding, and this is what the Buddha has taught. We should not just simply identify with the conventions, with what our tradition is, what the elders have taught us, what we are educated in. We should always investigate, always search if it is indeed so as we are told. And that we can only do when we have comparison. No? When we don't have comparison, how can we do? So we develop our thinking by comparison. No? And Indian thinking has developed so much, and also in a way Chinese thinking, because of comparison. While in our culture the religion oppressed any other ideas. But in India the different religion always lived together and discussed with each other, compared. That's how they could develop such a subtle language. In China also, to study Chinese culture, we need to know Confucianism, Taoism, Buddhism. To study Indian culture, we have to know many things. To understand Buddhism, we have to know Samkhya, Vedanta, we have to know Nyaya, Vaisheshika, Jainism to some extent, because they were discussing with each other and developing new ideas on the base of comparison. So this curiosity is so important. The ancient Greeks, they were so wise people, but dogmatism made the Middle Ages, no? Okay, so no more question. Christina looking at me like having something very important in mind, no?
I don't know if it's important to this practice, but I always wondered, there's a sutta that talks about three types, a body witness, and a faith type, and a witness type. But there, I don't, what's a body witness type?
Body witness? I don't remember this sutta. Where did you find it?
In the Majjhima Nikaya. I can't remember what number it is.
Body witness and?
Body witness and faith type. And
faith, shraddha. Huh?
Yes, and a wisdom type. So those three types.
Body witness, witness by faith.
Yes.
And witness by
wisdom.
wisdom. Body witness, this is very interesting. Let us think about it. Well, body witness actually has the meaning you witness by body when you have experienced all these state, all these liberations. That is liberation by witnessing. But here it must mean something else, I guess. Witness by face. Actually, the Buddhism speaks of different types of abhisamaya, realization. There is a realization by faith. That means when you become a sotapanna, your faith in the triple gem and in the Buddha's teaching is unshakable. You cannot even imagine that there can be something else. The witnessing by wisdom maybe is liberation, possibly, because liberation means the science, the knowledge. But I don't know, I have not. We can speculate. You have to read the Attakatha, the commentaries. So shall we do some meditation? Yes, please. Yes, I'm listening.
Okay. I'm new to this practice, and I'm struggling to understand what you mean by a mental image of the Anapana.
Okay.
The concept of Anapana.
I have explained it. It is actually very simple. The real breath are the four elements. That means there is vibration, there is warmth and coolness. This is what you distinguish by the bodily consciousness. You experience the breath by bodily consciousness and by mental consciousness. Bodily consciousness cannot experience the concepts. Only mental consciousness can experience the concepts. And we are ruled by the mental consciousness, by the concepts. Man, woman, car, I don't know what, house. Everything we are kind of giving rise to our defilements are these concepts. They are mentally created. The animals, they have very different concepts. But they have the same instinct of clinging and of dislike and liking, right? We cling to $100 note is more than the $1 note. When we see $1 note, we have different reaction. When we see $100 note, we have a different reaction. A dog, he does not care. It is one, because he has a different convention. But when he sees a bone with blood, we may be disgusted, but his tail starts wagging. He has a very different concept of this bone, right? So we are all, our concepts are our karma. This is very important to understand. And now, the breath that you experience with the body are this sensation of hardness, softness, smoothness, roughness, heaviness, lightness, coolness, heat, cohesion, which brings this, all this together according to Abhidharma, it is mental object, but not according to Northern Buddhism, but it doesn't matter. The pushing, or the sensation of vibration, this is wind, and the breath is nothing but the wind, because the wind element is predominant in it. But when you practice the concentration on the breath, you don't pay attention and concentrate on vibration, do you? Yes. So only the mental consciousness can develop concentration and develop wisdom. The five senses, they cannot do it. Right? The five senses cannot develop concentration, cannot develop senses, cannot develop wisdom. So you can only be, you are bound by the mental consciousness, and you can be only liberated by the mental consciousness. So what you hold in your mind is not these vibrations, is not if it is hot or if it is if it is cool. What you hold in your mind is the image you make on the base of the information you got through the bodily consciousness. And that is the mental consciousness. And mental consciousness recognizes the concept, not the bodily consciousness. And because the concept stays, but the wind never stays, you are staying with the concept, you are not staying with the wind. But this concept you have attained based on the wind. But it is a concept, it is not the wind. With wind you cannot stay. Is it clear?
Not completely.
Well, so you just meditate and see clearly. How can you stay with the sensation of heat, sensation of coolness, sensation of vibration? How can you stabilize the mind on it? You have to make it a concept. Only the concept stays, not the reality. The reality does not stay. Okay. Yes, I can hear. Please, yes, you are raising the hand. Not
based on this question, I know in my experience, the wind or the physical sensations of the breath, it took a while for it to become a concept of a knowing, of an in and out. Doesn't that take time, though, for each person? You can't just suddenly come up with a concept. You know what I mean? It has to take time, right?
Well, when the concentration is there and wisdom, awareness is there, it will become clear that it is not the bodily sensation, but it is the mental sensation. No? And the mental sensation is, of course, more subtle than the bodily sensation. Because only the mental consciousness can develop concentration and wisdom. The bodily consciousness has not this ability. It will only be connected with stability when on the base of the mental consciousness. But the five consciousnesses are, by their very nature, disturbed consciousnesses. We have given the example of the five stones on the surface of the drum. When one stone moves, all the stones are moving. So where will you find stability? Where will you find wisdom in this movement? And this is the reality. So we need a clear concept. It is very, very important. Actually, we meditate also on the concept. From the point of view of Northern Buddhism, the five aggregates are also a concept. Everything you put into the mind is a concept. Because the mind itself is has not any fixed concept. This is peculiarity of the Yogacara, of the non-dualistic approach to meditation.
And I agree with it, because the Theravadin practice is the same way. I was just saying it's probably different to each individual and when that happens.
Well, it is useful to have both, because in the non-dualistic meditation, like we study the Heart Sutra, you see things from the end, and in the Theravada you see things from the beginning. You never understand the beginning without some notion of the end, and you never understand the end without the beginning. So you need both. And according to transcendental wisdom, the beginning and the end, they cannot be separated. Because we are in the one boat, that is the mind. Very wonderful, this. And the mind is by its nature, at least so it is believed, you should investigate, is non-dualistic. The dualism develops from the karmic mind. Due to karmic mind, there is subject and object as something separate. That is Yogacara. It is also very enlightening aspect, even for understanding the Theravada. So they are based on the same tradition, but you can see the same tradition from different aspects. The Buddha finally taught only liberation according to the need and capability of different beings to understand. Okay. So we will do some meditation. Now it's
thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.